The unsurpassed, penetrating, or perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Good morning. And nice to see all of you. We have a big group here today. I wanted to first off thank everyone who came to the Friends of Shasta Abbey workday yesterday. We got a lot done. I think we had a good time doing it. I gave a Dharma talk yesterday afternoon to our lay residents about the merit of working together, so I'm not going to rehash that today, so they'd be hearing it again. But I would like to say that this was another direct experience of a group of people coming together in a peaceful and harmonious way and making a generous offering in what they do and how they do it. And I think that our world could use a lot more of this. On this Meditation Sunday, I'd like to offer some more reflections on meditation. Hopefully they're a little different than the last ones I did on the Meditation Sunday and of help to you. My teacher, Reverend Master G.U. Kennett, had a bumper sticker for a while on one of her cars. It read, "Just don't do something, sit there." Okay, you know, it's usually, "Don't just sit there, do something." But her said, "Don't just do something, sit there." Okay. It's a little bit of a turn on that one. Yesterday, we were active in our meditation practice. Today, we sat quietly in our meditation practice. I think if you do this practice, you see that one flows into the other and that one is an expression of the other. I've also found, at least for myself, if I'm always active and moving, I can lose touch with the natural stillness of my heart. So I put great stock in myself for taking time to sit still. Also, what I tend to do is miss the obvious. And in missing the obvious, I don't do a very good job of manifesting Buddha nature. Activity is best served with a still mind and heart. So it's a good way to approach activity. On the other hand, we can't sit around doing nothing every moment of the day. I mean, just first off, that would be dukkha for the body. You know, if you sat in meditation just hour after hour after hour after hour after hour, most of us would have an aching, screaming body, and we probably wouldn't want to sit down again for a while. Bodies like movement. And activity properly done is a real expression of generosity, compassion, and mindfulness. In our tradition, we really put emphasis on everyday activity and say that in everyday activity is enlightenment. We don't distinguish between the two. Okay. Great Master Dogen said that when by the correct ordering of our daily life we exhibit the heart of Buddhism, we are free from delusive body and mind. As this is so, the disciplined life of the trainee is the embodiment of both enlightenment and practice, pure and immaculate since before time began. So a good balance of stillness and activity, that's a good thing. It's a good thing for our practice. So let me now talk a little bit more just about seated meditation. I don't think actually that we give a very detailed instruction on formal meditation in our practice. We have Great Master Dogen's meditation rules. We have Great Master Kazon's pure meditation. We have Bodhidharma's pure meditation. These are all wonderful adjuncts and helps to our meditation practice. But you know, we're not as detailed as some schools of Buddhism. think part of the reason is that when it comes to sitting with no deliberate thought, it's hard to describe that. I mean, you got the words, you got the phrase, okay, and you can kind of hold that, but you actually have to experience it. You have to practice it for yourself. There's the trial and error of your practice. You hit upon things, you mature in your practice, and then there's the endless subtlety of new discovery, and quite amazing things that we see if we continue to just go on in our meditation. So we say, going on, always becoming Buddha. There's a real interesting dialogue in the Anguttara Nikaya. So those are the discourses related by number. And this is an exchange between two of the Buddha's disciples. So this is at the time of the Buddha. And I think that for me, when I read this, it really shed some light on our meditation, okay, and what we're doing when we're practicing properly and what happens when we go off from that. So let me read this. Then Venerable Anuruddha. Then Venerable Anuruddha went to where Venerable Shariputra was staying, and on arrival greeted him courteously. After an exchange of friendly greetings, he sat down to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to Venerable Shariputra, "By means of the divine eye, purified and surpassing the human, I see the thousandfold cosmos. My energy is aroused and unsluggish. My mindfulness is established and unshaken. My body is calm and unaroused." This sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Okay. But there's more here. Okay, my body is calm and unaroused. My mind is concentrated into singleness. And yet, my mind is not released from the outflows through lack of clinging. So Shariputra, who's very wise, says, "My friend, when the thought occurs to you by means of the divine eye, purified and unsurpassing the human, I see the thousandfold cosmos. That is related to your conceit. When the thought occurs to you, my energy is aroused and unsluggish. My mindfulness is established and unshaken. My body is calm and unperturbed. My mind is concentrated into singleness. That is related to your restlessness. When the thought occurs to you, and yet my mind is not released from the outflows through lack of clinging, that is related to your anxiety. It would be well if, abandoning these three qualities, not attending to these three qualities, you directed your mind to the deathless element." And Anuruddha, who is a very accomplished meditator, you know, he's been practicing for quite a while. It pings him, you know. I mean, it strikes a chord. And he abandons those qualities. He no longer attends to those three qualities. He directs his mind to the deathless element. And very quickly, he has a very deep understanding. Okay. So, Venerable Anuruddha, I think I got it now, was not a beginner. Okay, he was well established and far along in his practice. And yet, he was missing something. I think maybe he had made his meditation a little too complicated. Okay, and it said about Venerable Shariputra that although he ranked first among the Buddha's disciples in overall comprehension of the Dharma, unlike a number of the monks, he did not strive after supernormal modes of knowledge and psychic power. It's also said that Shariputra's meditation was a natural expression of his realization rather than a means towards some higher attainment. Well, that sounds to me like Zazen or serene reflection. It's not the type of meditation we do. Venerable Shariputra was pointing to the fact that there was a grasping and a clinging in the way that his fellow monk was practicing. Okay? Conceit, restlessness, and anxiety. And we're not looking at these as, you know, oh, this terrible person. You know, it's just kind of matter of fact. Conceit, restlessness, and anxiety. Hard time pronouncing words today. Anxiety is actually usually stated as ignorance, but in this case, anxiety was used. Well, these are the last of the 10 fetters. And a fetter in Buddhism is an obstacle or illusion which shackles us to the cycle of birth and death. It shackles us to samsara. I'll just give you the 10 fetters if you're interested. Okay, they're usually separated into the lower and the higher. The lower fetters are identity view, doubt, the distorted grasp of rules and vows, sensual desire, ill will. Okay, the five higher fetters, lust for form, lust for formlessness, conceit, restlessness, ignorance. Shariputra used anxiety for ignorance in this. Okay, and although Anuruddha could see the thousandfold cosmos, he was still not seeing it with an I, a me, and a mine. He was clinging. Okay, he had a self. So if you have a self when you view these things, you view them from that self. You know, there are some of us in our meditation practice that have deep absorption, great insight. I think this is wonderful. Okay, don't get me wrong on this, because I think those can be wonderful things. And they can be good, and they can be helpful. But I think one has to be careful. Because it's easy to cling to these states, and why wouldn't you? You know, if you have deep absorption, you know, life is chaotic, unpeaceful, disturbing. So if you have deep absorption, it's wonderful, okay? It's fascinating. You can seek out these conditions because you want more. I mean, why wouldn't you want more? Okay. Well, there's a reason why you would want more. Because it's another distraction. Okay? It's taking something that has a goodness to it, and then it's putting the self in there and desire in there and grasping at something. And it actually, that's not the nature of even those things. They arise, they pass. Okay? And remember, the basis of our meditation is no deliberate thought. So we're trying to, with these things, I want more, we're grasping after them. And with this no deliberate thought that we are, with the deliberate thought that we're falling into, we're actually setting up opposites. Okay, is there something to go after? There's something to avoid. In the meditation rules that great Master Dogen left us, he says, however much you may be proud of your understanding, however much you may be enlightened, whatever your attainment of wisdom and supernatural power, your finding of the way to mind illumination, your power to touch heaven and to enter enlightenment, when opposites arise, you have almost lost the way to salvation. I think what's important here is the almost. Didn't say you've lost it completely. It says, you know, you're straying off. So what do we do here if we have these deep absorptions and insights that pull us off. Well, I'd say don't purposely cultivate these states. Let them come and go. Okay? If it's there, fine. If it's not there, that's okay too. Okay? Focus on your practice in your everyday life. Express generosity, kindness, and compassion. Everything you do. Okay? Let wisdom take care of itself. Because that's how we really find wisdom. We don't strive after it. We let it take care of itself, but we do the training. Okay, so although Venerable Anuruddha had excellent form, concentration, and mechanics in his meditation, he had a bit of a problem with contentment. He was proud, and he was filled with his fine qualities. You know, it's a pretty strong statement that he made to Shariputra. I don't know about your mind, but there's this thing that can go on in my mind where everything is, you know, great at one moment, and then a little doubt arises. Okay? And then rather than being content, I can feed into the doubt. Okay? And then I can proceed to question the value of the practice. That's the grass is greener over there syndrome. You know, then it's maybe I don't have the right teacher. Maybe I should find a place where people are truly dedicated to meditation. You know, all these scenarios that we kind of throw up. Also, when we begin our meditation practice, for many of us, we have to learn to quiet our body and our mind down. Our body and mind fidget. Okay? I definitely was a fidgeter. After we've been practicing for a while, we still have to watch the mind's restlessness. Because it's restless in even subtler ways. Anuruddha qualities of energy, mind, and body were good. But there was still a self in each of them. This was his problem. He was clinging to something in each one of these. The last of the fetters that Venerable Shariputra addresses is anxiety. And it seems to me that our world is plagued with anxiety. You know, with all our supposed time-saving gadgets and instant communication, we don't seem to have a less stressful life. In fact, I think we have a more stressful life. Thus, sitting still, just sitting with no deliberate thought, is even more important than ever. So, and with this last fetter, our Venerable had a clue here. He knew that clinging is not the way. And yet, I think he might have been clinging to non-clinging. Again, he had a fixed idea. And then he stressed about it. He stressed about why didn't it have the result he thought it should, compounding delusion later on by following ideals. If we buy into the anxious mind, we really take ourselves on a roller coaster ride. We can blow up small things out of proportion and get really upset. Our vision becomes clouded. And most of all, we waste good time. You know, when we get in this kind of rut of anxiety, we just fritter away time. So when anxiety arises, just sit still. Sit quietly within. Don't push it away. And for heaven's sake, don't hold on to it. Because, you know, we have this peculiar way of holding on to the very things that don't help us. Because, you know, in this very place where the anxiety arises, in this very place of suffering, we can find release and liberation. It's my experience that obstacles dissolve if we trust unconditionally in our Buddha nature and act from that place. So we have to trust and we have to act. Worry, stress, anxiety, you know, it would be great if they didn't arise in the mind, but they do, okay? They also pass. They really only have the energy that we give them. And, you know, the real question is, where do we really need to invest our energy and our time? Okay. This is, again, from Meditation Rules. The ancestors were very diligent, and there is no reason why we people of the present day cannot understand. All you have to do is cease from erudition, withdraw within, and reflect upon yourself. Should you be able to cast off body and mind naturally, the Buddha mind will immediately manifest itself. So on one hand, it takes great effort and discipline to practice serene reflection meditation. There's just no doubt about that. On the other hand, there's a natural sense of ease and joy in our practice. And you want to hold these both simultaneously, because you need both sides. Okay? You know, above all, I don't think we need to stress ourselves out more. Okay? So, just carry it lightly. Carry it all lightly. It's the great matter, but we have to carry the great matter lightly. And I don't know, some of you probably have had a chance to see Reverend Master Jiyu's article in the recent journal, which is a Dharma talk she gave long ago. It's entitled, "It's Enough for Me to Know the Unborn." And I think this kind of sums up and rounds out what I'm trying to say here. So she says, the point is that it can be experienced, and the it here is capitalized. It can be known, but it cannot be held on to. Dogen's famous metaphor of putting one's hand into the water and feeling the water flow through one's fingers is highly applicable here. You cannot take your hand out of the water and hope to hold on to a handful of water. But when you have your hand in the water, you know what water is as it flows past. And for the true trainee, it is enough to know the Buddha nature. It does not need to be grasped, held on to, or attached to. All these lovely, highfalutin, philosophical words like attachment and non-attachment all sound so wonderful. But what matters is that it is enough to know Buddha nature. It is enough to know the unborn. Don't try to hold on to it. Don't try to grasp it. Let it flow and be content. Okay, she says, additionally, when I was in the Far East, people were encouraged to write down what went on in their meditation. And, you know, I think in this present day, journaling is a thing that people find very helpful. So this was encouraged in the Far East in terms of your meditation. And the instant they became too analytical or too philosophical, they were stuffed back into their shells again with the words, be content. And Red Master says again, is enough to know the unborn. Do not try to analyze and sort out. Don't get me wrong. The mind that sorts out and analyzes has its purpose when it comes to balancing your checkbook. But do not abuse it by trying to make it understand ultimate things. I think that's a really interesting use of the word abuse. You know, we can abuse our own mind by not using it properly. Just be content and all the unnecessary thinking and worry will be washed out of you like so much dirt out of dirty linen. Okay, and then finally she says, constantly take refuge in your fellow trainees, whether they be senior or junior to you, and do not be lazy. Do not avoid hardships, excuse me, and do not worry about those who misunderstand. These are part of this human life, part of the suffering exists, of Shakyamuni Buddha's first noble truth. Do not expect to avoid such things along the way to genuine Buddhist understanding. Do not seek to define mind or Buddha or Buddha nature, and do not be afraid of such words. Do not worry about concepts or theories. For you, it must be enough to know the unborn, to know the Buddha nature. Trying to grasp it is exactly the same as trying to eat a painting of a rice cake. And as Dogen points out, do not devalue even a painting of a rice cake. For to the unborn Buddha mind, all things can nourish true training. So I think she really sums up, you know, that mind of meditation, that one where we just can, if we let go of the grasping, just let it run through our hands. If we have wonderful experiences, you know, that's great. If we just have ordinary everyday life with its myriad difficulties, we train there. Okay, we don't want to grasp one and push away the other, because they're both there. Okay? I seem to have raced through this today. That's the way it goes sometimes. So I got one more thing to say. And this is again about Shariputra, because I think it's a credible little tale here. Once when Shariputra was living with Moggallana, he was sitting in meditation out in the open air on a full moon night, his head freshly shaved. A malicious demon passing overhead in a spiteful mood descended and gave the elder a severe blow on the head. But Shariputra was so deeply absorbed in meditation that he suffered no harm. So then the venerable Mahamoggallana comes along. Actually, he sees this incident. And he approaches Shariputra and asks him, he says, friend, are you comfortable? Are you doing well? Does nothing trouble you? And, you know, venerable Shariputra says, I'm comfortable, friend Moggallana. I am doing well, but I have a slight headache. Okay. So then venerable Moggallana says, it is wonderful, friend Shariputra. It is marvelous, friend Shariputra. How great is the psychic power and might of venerable Shariputra? For just now, friend Shariputra, a certain demon gave you a blow on the head, and such a mighty blow it was that it might have felled an elephant or split a mountain peak. But the venerable Shariputra says only this, I am comfortable, friend Moggallana. I am doing well, friend Moggallana, but I have a slight headache. Then the venerable Shariputra replied, it is wonderful, wonderful, friend Moggallana. It is marvelous, friend Moggallana. How great is the psychic power and might of the venerable Moggallana that he should see any demon at all. As for me, I have not seen so much as a mud sprite, whatever that is. So meanwhile, the Blessed One had been listening in with his divine ear to this discussion between the two elders, and he then spoke the following inspired utterance in praise of Shariputra, whose mind stands unmoving as a rock, unattached to things that arouse attachment, unangered by things that provoke anger. How can suffering come to one whose mind has been cultivated thus? So it's a nice little piece. And I hope those brief reflections were helpful for you. And excuse me for my pronunciations, but you know, some days you just can't get them. When I was in the third grade in Catholic school, okay, my teacher was sick. The nun that taught me was sick. So we had the principal, another nun. A lot of these were Irish Catholic nuns, Irish immigrants, come substitute in our class. And I really couldn't read, you know, as a kid. I couldn't. You know, and in those days, we didn't know too much about dyslexia. We just thought some children had problems reading. But anyway, we had a reading time in our class, and so here we have the principal there. And there was this thing that was done in the reading class where the previous reader would pick the next one. And you know how kids can kind of be not very nice to each other. So they would pick the worst readers, some of them, the skunks. And then they pick me. And I got to the word this. I could not say it. I just couldn't say it. I don't know what was going on. It's not a difficult word, you know. I couldn't say it. And I just stood there. And you know, it was an eternity. It was probably about 10 seconds because I think she probably just kind of shook me along and you know, went to the next person. Because actually she was very compassionate. But so it goes. So thank you very much. Hope that was helpful.